What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my co-host, David Drogemeyer. We are two writers who got our start at San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog. We've been covering the Chargers for over five seasons now, doing our own Facebook live show, Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly. And I also write for the LA Football Network as well. And now it's our third season as the host of the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, guys, well, a super fun show for you guys. As I said on yesterday's show, we couldn't get Daniel Popper on, but we do have him for today's show. So you're going to want to stick around for the Popper interview. It's going to be the second and the third segments of today's show, and we're going to get into a lot with him. I mean, just what his life is like right now in quarantine, what the Chargers did in free agency, what they plan on doing in the draft, and much more with Daniel Popper coming up. But we're going to start today with the news that there have been some negative reports on Tua Tagovailoa's health, which is definitely news. And also the Chargers have brought back one of their restricted free agents. So David, let's go ahead and get into it. On Thursday, there were reports that Tua Tagovailoa's injuries might go deeper than we may think, and one of the Chargers' restricted free agents signed his tender. This is Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer with your Locked On Chargers lead story. Tua Tagovailoa is one of the top quarterback prospects in the draft, and his injury history has been the main topic of conversation for those who are considering drafting him. And earlier in the week, former NFL front office executive Michael Lombardi reported on his GM Shuffle podcast that Tua failed at least one physical with a team already. And what they saw is they saw the fact that it's not just his hip, it's his ankle, and it's his wrist. He also reported that he broke his wrist the first day of spring ball 1 year, and then they fixed it and he came back and he broke it again. So David, this is the first sort of negative comments we've seen on Tua Tagovailoa's injury. And I think it is definitely concerning to think that one team failed him on a physical, and that all could be smokescreen reasons and some team putting that out there. But so far, everything we've heard is him checking all of the boxes in his recovery from the hip injury. But now we're seeing it could be two wrist injuries that we previously haven't heard of. His agent, Lee Steinberg, did come out and say that there's no recurrence that's going to happen here and that Tua's health is fine. So they have responded to it. But David, this is just a little bit of something to think about, because before this, we hadn't really heard anything negative about how he is recovering from his injuries.
It seems like as we get closer to the draft each year, more and more information comes out about some of the top prospects. And if there is any validity to this for Tua Tagovailoa, then there's a lot to be concerned, and it could definitely cause a precipitous drop. You know, injury history is a big concern. I mean, if you can't get on the football field consistently, then you're not going to be able to help teams win, and they're not going to want to invest a first round pick and their future on a quarterback that has so many questions. That's why his agent was so quick to put information out that would combat that, saying, hey, he is healthy, there is nothing to worry about here. He also did a pro day that he disseminated out to all the teams to kind of prove that he was healthy. Hopefully he was able to show that he was healthy to all those teams, because if there is any validity to these reports, it's going to cause a lot of damage to him come draft time.
Right. Nobody wants to pick a quarterback in the top five or top 10 or even the first round if that player is not going to be able to stay healthy. You can tell that the pro day was put out in kind of a response to this as well, because he wasn't able to do his actual pro day due to the coronavirus outbreak. But his agent and him are saying that he's 100%. He's throwing on video to show teams that he can throw, trying to do whatever he can to get people to think about him as a player and not just the risk that he brings because of his injuries. But another thing that happened on Thursday is the Chargers restricted free agent Michael Davis signed his tender, which was a second round tender. It's worth around $3.3 million, and this was reported by Field Yates. And David, this is news just because obviously you don't want this dragging out any more than it has to, and also by the fact that the Chargers didn't elect to sign him to a multi-year deal that would have kept him around longer. We know how talented this Chargers secondary is. So David, I think this is the Chargers showing a little bit of faith in Michael Davis while also not having a lot of money tied up in him long term.
They obviously believe in Michael Davis because they put a second round tender on him. They didn't want other teams to come sniffing around and try to steal him away. I mean, he does have the body type, he has the size, he has the speed, so he has great attributes. But obviously there are several things that Michael Davis needs to work on. He needs to continue to work on getting his head turned around. He needs to work on the tackling. And I think this is the Chargers saying, hey, if you want a long-term extension with us, then you need to go prove that our confidence in you was not misguided. This is his opportunity to go out and make his money, go out and prove that he can be a starting corner in this league and go earn a long-term extension, because at the end of the day, that's what every player in the league wants. They want security. This is his chance to go get that.
And the one thing we do believe is the fact that he will have a chance to do it. Right now, he is the starting outside cornerback on the opposite side of Casey Hayward. And even if they were to bring in a rookie, we'd think that he would still get the first crack at being the starter at the position. After Michael Davis is an extremely shallow group of cornerbacks. So they had to bring him back. They had to keep him around, not as a backup plan, but just to make sure they have a somewhat average player at the position, because behind him is Brandon Faison, who really struggled last year. So maybe they bring in another corner in the draft and try to give him some competition there, but he's going to have the first shot at being the starting corner for the Chargers. He's going to have to go out there and prove that some team, whether it's the Chargers or another team in the NFL, to go and sign him to that multi-year deal. But we do have two more segments to get into, and we are talking with Daniel Popper from The Athletic, so you're definitely going to want to hear what he has to say coming up right after this. All right, guys. Well, here it is. We finally have him for you today. We didn't just keep putting it off and lying to you and saying that Daniel Popper was going to go on the show. He's really here with us today. So we have Daniel Popper, who's the Chargers beat writer for The Athletic, putting out really good content. If you don't, I mean, already subscribed to The Athletic, you really should. I promise you it's worth it. But if you don't already, make sure to go follow him at Daniel R. Popper on Twitter. He has some really funny takes. I mean, good sports takes, great taco takes, some would say. But Daniel, first of all, just thanks for coming on with us, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, guys, anytime, anytime.
So first, let me just come out and say that we here at Locked On Chargers want to just give a shout out to your girlfriend, who is a nurse on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic. Your post on Twitter really stuck with me, and I just wanted to take a second to appreciate all of the healthcare workers out there fighting for us. But, I mean, this has been a crazy time for everyone, so I just wanted to ask you, how has it been for you so far continuing to cover the Chargers during quarantine?
Yeah, well, first off, appreciate the kind words. She actually just left for work about a half hour ago, so it's a little nerve-wracking, but luckily in California, you know, we've all been doing a really good job of staying home and following these social distancing guidelines, and as a result, we've been able to flatten the curve here in California, and it hasn't gotten too bad at some of the hospitals, so keep doing that. That's the one message I'll give to you on quarantine and the pandemic right now, is just stay home as much as you can, stay inside, stay safe, because it is working. And as much as you want to go outside and you want to enjoy this beautiful weather and you want to go to the beaches, like I sure as hell do, but we got to do this together. We got to stay inside, because ultimately the ones that are going to suffer are the frontline nurses and healthcare employees and doctors that are fighting this thing. And we got to think of them, and the way we can think about them and to do the best for them is to stay inside. But you know, it's a little nerve-wracking time, but we're all coming together, and we're seeing some really, you know, inspiring moments of humanity everywhere. So let's all come together and keep doing that. And, you know, I appreciate you mentioning my girlfriend. I'm certainly in awe of everything that she's doing.
And obviously those are the people you think about the most right now. But has it been weird at all trying to cover the Chargers while being stuck in quarantine? Even obviously knowing things really aren't happening right now in the NFL world, everything you can kind of cover for a distance. But what has that been like?
Yeah, it actually hasn't been too different for us as NFL reporters. We're pretty much doing, you know, what we normally would be doing, which is, you know, writing analysis on free agency, texting agents, talking to team personnel, and that kind of thing to gather information and sort of paint a picture of you know, what the process has been through free agency and the roster building process. And then obviously now around early April, we turn our sights, you know, full steam ahead to the draft and start looking into prospects and doing our mock drafts and looking at potential candidates and focusing on needs and all that kind of stuff. So it hasn't been too different. You know, in the sports writing world, where it's affected people more is, you know, with the leagues that stopped between the NHL and the NBA and MLB now getting postponed, having no opening day. I think those writers have obviously been struggling a little bit more to find content. But, you know, for the NFL writers, it's, you know, it's been business as usual. Obviously, there's a little bit of a question mark there as to whether they were actually going to hold the draft, but they're going to do it. And, you know, it shouldn't really affect too much because they're going to get their picks in and they're going to, you know, as far as actually, you know, making the selections, it shouldn't really make too much of a difference. The logistics might be a little different because you can't have a war room and guys with the Chargers or whatever team won't be able to have face-to-face discussions, and it will be a little bit harder to communicate. But teams will prepare for that. And, you know, Tom Telesco has said that the Chargers have a plan in place to facilitate the communication necessary to make the best picks possible. But really not too much different for NFL writers. It's been pretty lucky in that regard.
After the first big moves by the Chargers in free agency, you put on Twitter that it would have been a perfect offseason by Tom Telesco if the Chargers were to bring in Jason Peters. The team is obviously has a need at left tackle right now. What do you think has kind of stopped them from actually bringing him in and making that move?
It's an interesting question. So I guess I did tweet that it would be close to a perfect offseason. The one signing that doesn't make a ton of sense for me was Chris Harris. So the more I've thought about that signing, the more I've questioned it a little bit. Like, he's a great player, but I'm still confused, and I think everyone's sort of confused about where exactly he's going to fit. And Anthony Lynn didn't really clarify exactly where Desmond King fits into the picture. And, you know, is he going to be competing at slot with Chris Harris? Are they going to trade Desmond King? Is Desmond going to play Adrian Phillips' role? What does that mean for Nasir Adderley? So the more I've sort of digested that signing, I don't know if it makes a ton of sense unless the team has really feels like they want to move on from Desmond King. He's obviously a free agent after this season, which is certainly possible. As far as Jason Peters goes, I'm sure they're interested. I can't report that they've reached out to Jason Peters. I've tried to find out and do some digging on that, and I haven't heard anything back. He is an older veteran. It's quite possible that he's sort of waiting until closer to training camp to sign whatever contract he signs. With a veteran like that, it's not, you know, super essential for them to get into the building early and get a contract signed. I think it's possible that he also doesn't want to leave Philadelphia. He's been there for forever, and, you know, the Eagles have said they want him to let him test the market. I don't think it's an indication that they're not going to sign him or they're not interested. I think he's sort of in a very, you know, unique situation. Jason Peters is just as an older player who has performed at such a high level and has all these accomplishments. And so he's not, you know, it's not super pressing for him at 38 years old to sort of find that next team until closer to training camp. And then obviously you factor in the pandemic and COVID and all the changes that have been forced to make the schedule and all the uncertainty. That obviously plays a factor in it as well. I would imagine it's still on the table. I would expect it to be on the table. If I was running the Chargers, as I've said numerous times, I think it makes a ton of sense for them. But there's also a possibility that the Chargers are looking to make that upgrade at tackle in the draft. And as I'm sure we'll get into, there are a lot of very, very talented and athletic offensive tackles in this draft that would fit very nicely with what the Chargers are trying to do, especially in the run game this coming season. And there's always that thought to, you know, bring in a young player who is cheaper and could develop into a better player at this point than Jason Peters would be just because he's a little older. So all that's really a factor, but I wouldn't rule it out at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the fit would make sense just because if you really believe in Trey Pipkins, getting a short-term solution there, if you decide to go elsewhere, you know, with the sixth pick and all that, it just seemed like it would make a lot of sense for the two sides to come together. But one of the most recent news that has come out with the Chargers is that they are selected to be on HBO's Hard Knocks. So I just wanted to know what your first reaction was to that when you saw it.
I wasn't overly surprised. It makes sense. I mean, at this point in time, what the Chargers are trying to do is they're trying to grow their fan base by any means possible. And one thing they are focusing on as an organization from a business perspective is targeting younger people because they realize that the people that are older, you know, people that are 30 and over, you know, they're not really going to change allegiances. You know, if they are Packers fans or Cowboys fans and became fans of those teams while the NFL wasn't in LA, they're not going to change. So what they need to do is target young people. And, you know, young people watch Hard Knocks. You know, I watch it obviously now that I'm associated with the league and covering the league, but when I was younger in high school, you know, I was watching Hard Knocks. It was every Sunday, you know, for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, whatever it is before the season. It was like that first taste of football, and I used to watch it with all my friends, and I'm sure you guys do the same thing every year. It's absolutely fascinating stuff for any NFL fan. So I think in their minds, they're like, okay, let's do Hard Knocks. Let's get our name out there, and let's try and build the fan base and target young people that can potentially become our fans. I think it's smart. I think it makes a lot of sense. Obviously, it infringes a little bit, but at the end of the day, the football people do have to make some concessions here to try and build this fan base. You got to get out in the community, and you got to do these types of PR things to try and build your fan base, and that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, from that aspect, it makes a lot of sense because, I mean, you really get to see kind of some characters and unique characters come out in those kind of behind the scenes things like Hard Knocks. You always get a few guys that are just lovable guys to root for and see those, you know, unique characters kind of come out. So I think it makes a lot of sense for him from that standpoint. But we do have a bunch of more stuff we want to talk to you about. And Anthony Lynn's comments being one of the things, and also getting ready to talk about the draft because it's coming up here soon. So we're going to get into that coming up right after this.
All right, we're back here with Daniel Popper of The Athletic. You recently took a look at some of Tyrod Taylor's film from 2016 when Anthony Lynn was his offensive coordinator in Buffalo. There's been a lot of mixed feelings about Tyrod Taylor as a starter. What should fans expect if he is starting week one?
Yeah, so if you haven't read it, I suggest go reading the story that I put out. There's some cut-ups from the film, and I go through sort of his strengths and weaknesses. You know, the one thing that popped out positively on the film for me with Tyrod is like, he is dynamic with his legs. And like, everyone knew that. We've all seen him, you know, play, whether it's, you know, in the preseason for some of you Chargers fans. You know, I remember watching him obviously in Buffalo. He can move and he's mobile and he can make guys miss, and he can, you know, disguise some of your protection flaws with his legs. You know, and that also opens, you know, what I wrote in the piece is sort of opens up two things for you, right? You get the off-script stuff where he can escape pressure, make throws on the run, scramble, et cetera. But then you get the stuff that you can design around his legs, which Anthony Lynn loves to do. You know, you can design a lot of the zone read stuff. You can design the QB runs. You can design the RPOs. You know, the Chargers weren't doing a lot of RPO stuff because, frankly, Phillip Rivers wasn't really mobile enough to execute those kinds of RPOs at the rate that, say, you know, the Ravens do it or the Chiefs do it. That's something that Tyrod brings to the table. You know, what you lose is – you know, you lose some of the vision. You know, Phillip Rivers forced a lot of throws, but he had excellent vision for the most part throughout his career. It obviously declined a little bit. You know, he doesn't really see the middle of the field well. I went back to 2016 when Anthony Lynn was his offensive coordinator, and Tyrod Taylor was the only quarterback in all of football to throw to the middle of the field less than 18% of the time. He was actually at 14%, and only three or four guys were below 20%. He doesn't really throw to the middle of the field. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that he's a generally very cautious quarterback, and throwing over the middle of the field can tend to lead to interceptions and mistakes. And it's obviously a very dangerous place to throw the ball because there's more defenders. So that's what you'll sort of lose. And the question is, how does that sort of, you know, how does that pair with some of the talent and some of the weapons that the Chargers have? You know, Hunter Henry operates a lot in the middle of the field down the seam. Do you lose some of his production because Tyrod Taylor won't throw to the middle of the field? Austin Eckler, middle of the field. Keenan Allen, out of the slot, does a lot of his work in the middle of the field. So how are those guys going to produce at the same level if Tyrod Taylor isn't willing to throw to the middle of the field? You know, the final thing I will mention is that, and I got into this a little bit earlier, he is cautious, but that leads to a very, very low interception rate. So in many ways, you know, he really is the anti-Phillip Rivers. He doesn't really throw picks. He doesn't force throws, and he can move really, really well. So you're kind of getting a huge shift in what the offense is going to look like. But at the same time, I think a lot of those things that Tyrod does are what Anthony Lynn wants to do as an offensive coach and what he wants to implement. So I think you'll see a lot of that kind of stuff, zone read, you know, that quarterback running type stuff, RPOs, a lot more of that this coming season.
Yeah, and there was a lot more of that in the article that you wrote. I thought it was a really good breakdown of it. I mean, there's some more other really telling stats that you had in there as well, just about what to expect from him. But I wanted to get into just the press conference that Anthony Lynn had. He had a lot of questionable kind of comments in there, but one of the things I thought was most questionable was that he specifically talked about adding players at two position. He talked about potentially adding someone at tackle, and he also talked about adding a linebacker. So I just thought, I mean, that kind of strays from what his previous comments have been. I mean, he's usually, we have full faith in this guy. We have full faith in Sam Tivy or Trent Scott or whoever the case may be, but it just seemed like that was a little bit out of his character to go out there and say, hey, these are two spots we plan on bringing somebody in.
Yeah, no, he was pretty candid. I mean, it wasn't like he was like, yeah, we're going to draft this position, but you know, sure. Those are my biggest takeaways out of it. When he was like, listen, we're gonna look to add somebody at tackle, and we're gonna look to add somebody a linebacker. And you know, my first thought, and if you read my takeaways from his press conference, you know, my first thought on it is like, okay, you know, initially I was like, maybe they'll look to add a linebacker like fourth round, fifth round, somebody at will to compete with Drew Tranquil, or maybe Drew moves to Mike and Denzel Perryman moves to sort of a backup role, whatever it may be, just somebody else to get into that rotation. after him saying that in the press conference, I'm like, well, maybe this is a bigger need than they're letting on. And maybe Kaiser White's knee isn't holding up the way that they thought it would. And in that sense, maybe they need to add a linebacker a little bit higher. So is it that second round area? There's obviously a few guys there that are really intriguing. Zach Bond's a guy out of Wisconsin who a lot of guys have labeled an edge rusher, but from everything, from people I've talked to and things I've read, he could kind of fit in nicely at that will spot in the Chargers scheme and Gus Bradley's defensive scheme. You know, do they look to add a linebacker in the second round? You know, ultimately what I'm looking at is I think it's quarterback first round, offensive tackle second round, and then third round is where you could go either way for me. You could either go wide receiver and add some speed, or you could go linebacker and try and find somebody to compete at that will spot and add a little depth there at linebacker.
All right, Daniel, now I want to get into the draft because it is coming up in just a couple of weeks. As we've seen in countless mock drafts, the experts are dead set that the Chargers are going to take a quarterback with the 6th overall pick. How likely do you think that is that the team actually goes ahead and pulls the trigger?
I think it's very likely. Very, very likely. Like, I would be pretty shocked. Well, let me phrase it this way. It's either going to be a quarterback or an offensive tackle. If they go with a different position other than those two, I will be absolutely floored. If it's a tackle over a quarterback, I'll be surprised. I think quarterback is the most likely. And I keep going back to, you know, every radio interview I do, if you read me on theathletic.com/team/Chargers, then you know that this is my philosophy. Like, the best way to build a championship roster in the NFL is by having a talented quarterback on a rookie deal. And every time I talk about this, I point straight to the Chiefs. The Chiefs had Patrick Mahomes on a rookie deal. He's a very talented quarterback on a rookie deal, meaning that he's not making market value. So his cap hit this past season was $4.2 million. A typical cap hit for a quarterback is, you know, an elite quarterback like him is well over $25 million, probably over $30 million. I mean, Jared Goff's cap hit next year is like $36 million. It's insane. But because they had Patrick Mahomes, a really, really good player, probably the best player in the league on such a low cap hit, it meant they could take on other contracts that really were kind of cruddy contracts. Sammy Watkins was one really good example of that. He had a cap hit of over $19 million last season. Was he worth that cap hit? No. He gets injured a lot. He's not a super productive player anymore, but he's still very talented and fast. And in the Super Bowl, he made one of the biggest plays of the game. And so you're able to load your roster with more talent, take on some worse contracts because of having a quarterback on a rookie deal, which is why this makes so much sense. And Tom Telesco is a very pragmatic decision maker. He understands better than anyone else that having a quarterback on a rookie deal is the key to building a championship roster. And so I imagine he will go out and pull the trigger on that because it just makes too much sense from a roster building perspective.
And when we talked to Eric Williams about kind of the same thing, he also brought up just the fact that they passed up on Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson to take Mike Williams back in that draft. And just, can you really take the chance of passing that up again now that you're in the top 10 again? So, I mean, you really can't afford to miss. And with what you're talking about, I mean, there's even more examples than that. I mean, the Rams went to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff because of that kind of thing. I mean, you saw it with Russell Wilson in the Legion of Doom. I mean, we've seen it countless times. I mean, that's the way teams are trying to build rosters. Yeah, exactly. Carson Wentz with the, yeah, exactly. He wasn't the one that got it them, but he's the one that got him there kind of thing.
Right. Because yeah. You have Nick Foles on the contract he was on if Carson Wentz isn't on a rookie deal.
Well, and the rest of that loaded roster too. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. So you're spot on. The one example I point to after Mahomes is Russell Wilson. They won that Super Bowl, like you just said, with him on a rookie deal. So you can go back throughout the recent modern NFL history and pretty much, you know, every team, apart from a couple, you know, the Broncos, the Peyton Manning is one, but pretty much every team is going to have a guy on a rookie deal because it just opens you up to add so much talent to your roster.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, that's probably what Houston would be doing right now, too, if Bill O'Brien wasn't their head coach and their GM. I mean, that's what would be happening in Houston right now. But the last question.
What is he doing, man? Oh, my God.
It's a lot of fun. Don't ever take him away. Keep him in that job for forever. I can't get enough of it.
It's hilarious.
Just to create content for all of us, right? Just keep us all entertained. Keep him there, yeah.
He's the hero that we didn't know we needed. I mean, Bill O'Brien is here for all of the, you know, all of the content. But one last question just before we get you off. So we talked about quarterback and tackle being the two most likely positions that the Chargers would address in the first round. That's exactly kind of how we see it as well. Even though you've seen a couple experts now, you're going Okuda or going Simmons. But besides those two positions, you talked about linebacker a little bit, maybe as soon as the second round, but on days one and two, what are some of the other positions you think the Chargers could be putting a premier value on and trying to address in the first three rounds?
Right. So I'd say after quarterback and tackle, it's got to be wide receiver and linebacker. And then you start looking at some potential depth pieces. I think they could add a cornerback. I still think they need more depth at outside corner. I certainly don't trust Michael Davis. I'm not exactly sure why the team trusts him so much. I wasn't super impressed with how he played this past season. I think it's because he's really fast and has sort of the body type they're looking for, the sort of longer cornerback. But I wasn't really impressed with his tackling or his coverage skills this past season. And I thought that was a major need, which is why the Chris Harris signing was a little bit suspect to me. After cornerback, they could look into a nose tackle. You know, I know they signed Linval Joseph, but he's only on a 2-year deal. They can get out of that deal after 1 year. You know, the only other depth they really have at nose tackle is Cortez Broughton. He didn't get much playing time last year because he came down with mono. He's not super big either. So I'm not sure how great of a fit he is at the nose tackle.
He was more of a three technique in college too.
So they converted him. They kind of like saw that they didn't have much depth there, right, and they kind of converted him. You know, they could re-sign Damian Square. I think that would make a lot of sense, but I think they're going to go younger and cheaper and sort of look at to add a nose tackle in the draft, maybe in the fourth, fifth round or later. Lucky Fotu, I think that's how you pronounce his name, the nose tackle from Utah. I know they met with him. So he's possibly an option. And then I think a running back, you know, in the sixth or seventh round would make a lot of sense. They need a third back right now. I know they love Austin Ekeler. Who doesn't? He's a great player, and they're very high on Justin Jackson too, and they believe those guys can be a 1-2 punch. But they're sort of missing that kind of bigger bruiser back. You know, Melvin was a big guy. Melvin Gordon was a big dude.
Especially
sort of missing
in person.
That now. Austin, I mean, he's well-built. He's 6'2", 6'3". Like, he's a big dude. They don't really have that in the running back room right now. Justin Jackson and Ekeler are both about 200 pounds. You know, Ekeler's about 5'9". Justin Jackson's 5'11". So they could use a bigger guy. So I think they could look to add a guy, you know, in the sixth or seventh round, maybe a bigger bruiser type back to sort of fill out that room, because they're going to need a third back on that roster for sure. Those are the positions I would look into for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I hate to call Austin Ekeler a finesse player because I think that's underselling him a little bit, but I think they would skew more to that side of the scale, and both have had some injuries at points in their career. But Daniel Popper, you are awesome, man. Thanks for coming on with us. I know we've had you once before, but I definitely don't plan on waiting as long to have you on again. So thanks again for coming on with us, man.
Sound good, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
All right, guys, once again, if you don't already subscribe to The Athletic and read all of Daniel Popper's articles, it's really just some different. The Athletic content just hits different. That's kind of the best way I can describe it. But you can also follow him on Twitter at Daniel R. Popper. He has some really good insight there as well. All right, well, guys, I mean, I think that was a really fun interview. You can tell that Popper's definitely still locked in over there and really has his finger on the pulse of everything going on over there, even in quarantine. So that's impressive. But that is going to do it for today's show. We'll be back with you guys next week, and it's Mock Draft Monday version 6.0, and you're not going to want to miss it. Three different six-round mock drafts coming from the Locked On Chargers podcast, and then from that day and every day until that, we are just specifically breaking down the draft, a bunch of prospects to get into, so you're not going to want to miss it next week. But until next time, guys, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On LAC, and to like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers, as well as subscribing to us wherever you get your podcast from. You can find the Locked On Chargers podcast there. But we'll be back with you guys next week. Until then, take it easy and go Bolts.